Welcome to the Next Step Podcast Sunday Sermons, dedicated to the development, refinement, and general upliftment of the inner life. I'm your host, Jarrett Sanchez, and let me begin by saying that the Next Step Podcast is on hiatus. For many reasons, but the main one being I just don't have the time to produce the show the way that I like to anymore. And they're not the most well-produced shows or the most amazing pieces of media that you've ever heard. But, you know, I like to put my own little creative wrenchings into each episode and really put some work into it. It's a fun avenue for me, and I just don't have the time to do it the way that I want to anymore. So here we are. We have the Sunday sermons. What is that? Well, let me talk about where this idea came from. It was inspired by today's speaker, Manly P. Hall. He spoke mostly about esoteric and occult subjects, but he also had a lot to say about philosophy and seeking of higher virtue. And it is those lectures that I've been listening to a lot lately and have been just really amazed by at how much he offers in each lecture, how many ideas, how very meaty, and also how relevant they are to, to my own consciousness, but also to the kind of spirit that I put into the Next Step podcast, which also means that I think what he has to say is very relevant to you, the audience. And so by listening to one of these lectures, I was just completely amazed and wanted to make a full-blown episode out of it and, you know, realized I just don't have the time. So I took an idea from one of his lectures that really stuck in my mind. And this was a story he said about his upbringing in Pennsylvania in the early 20th century. For a time, he lived with a farming family, and every Sunday, the family would gather together and travel the 8 miles into town where they would attend the Sunday church services with everybody else from town. But then afterwards, they would all get out on the lawn, and they would spread the picnic blankets, and they would have themselves a nice little feast. Kids would play, and the adults would discuss, you know, the news of the day and whatever else it was, maybe whatever was delivered in the day's sermon and things like that. And it was a way of creating a strong community, personal bonds, and just good feelings shared by all, you know, and that was their entire Sunday. That was what this farming community did for the entire day of Sunday. And then Manly P. Hall later went on in his career and founded the Philosophical Research Society, and he did the same thing. He delivered these lectures, one of which you're going to hear today, every Sunday before lunch in front of an audience of about 100 people. And then afterwards, everybody would just get together, eat food, and talk, and, you know, make friends and discuss the ideas presented in the lecture and whatever other things came up. And it was just a great way for people to get together and be human and build community, because that's really what human beings are designed for. We're designed to survive by building community, you know, if you believe evolutionary biologists. And my own inner sense tells me the same thing. All my own spiritual seekings and inner philosophical crawlings have led me to the idea that, you know, community is where it's at. If we work simply just for the individual, we're not going to get anywhere, and we're going to be empty and shallow. And so I wanted to you know, while I can't make the full-blown productions that I want to, I wanted to at least put something out that was of value to you, the audience. And so that's where I came up with this idea. And for the first few, I probably will play talks by Manly Hall, but not every time. I'm going to feature all kinds of different stuff. I don't even know what will be coming up in the future, but all the Sunday sermons will be geared towards, you know, the inner life, you know, the sort of invisible experiences we all have as human beings, the invisible realms of our experience. You know, that's the inner life. And for many of us, we don't pay much attention to it. You know, maybe people, you listening here in the audience, you have a little bit more of an awareness of your inner self. But in general, the people that I talk to every day, the people that I see, the people that I notice in the media and everywhere else, just they don't have much of the bright inner life that I think human beings are geared for. And it's the inner life that inspires our outer actions. You know, what separates a Hopi Indian chief from somebody like Karl Rove? Well, it's their inner life. Sure, they grew up in different times and places and in different upbringings, but the decisions they made each are based upon their inner life, their inner knowings and understandings. And so I think that's a very important thing to spend some time on. And I want to contribute to your inner life in a positive and uplifting way that leads you from the self into community. I think that is the only way we can get through the current mess of civilization that we seem to be in. And for those of you listening who might not think we're in a mess as a civilization, well, I'm not smart enough to argue against it, but I'll tell you what, just look around and look at how unhappy so many people are in the United States. You know, that's supposed to be the best country in the world. Yet we're completely disempowered, have no control of our government, who is now attempting to nation build and create empire, killing so many innocent people across the world. Our communities aren't real communities so much. There are many great communities in the United States, sure. But in general, we have the suburban wasteland. We have the atomization of the individual, rampant loneliness and depression. So many people on antidepressant, anti-anxiety drugs. And each generation of children, myself being once a child, growing up asking the question, what is the point of all this and where are we headed for this? And the only answer given really boils down to, well, this is America. This is the best way to live. We're doing the good thing, you know? And if you don't like it, well, just think about all those people out there that don't have that good stuff. Well, you got it made, kid, so just keep on going. You know, you got generations of kids asking, what is the point of all this, and getting that for an answer, more or less. And it's just a real mess. And anybody whose life is altered in a negative way tends to start to see these things. Starts to see, oh, wow, I was really happy with my life before. Now things aren't going my way. I'm thinking a bit more about things. I'm looking at things differently, and I'm noticing a lot of things about this world that I didn't see before. And so many people have this experience of coming out of what was a very happy life. You know, they were content, but then things change, and they see more. They see some other sides of this reality we're in, and they're completely shocked because they see how big this problem is, this problem of civilization. And so before I go on ranting too much, I just want to say that it's towards cultivation in some way of this inner self that can combat this loneliness and this deprivation and all of these negative things that come with the current crisis we're in. That is what I'm gearing these Sunday sermons towards. You're not going to hear any one religion. You know, this isn't a recruitment gig. This is just simply my little addition to the inner life of anybody who cares to listen. So I know you can't really build community with a podcast, but I certainly know that podcasts can be an amazing tool to inspire and to get people through their drudgery, their work week, and help motivate them towards finding a better way and at least finding more ways to make a better world. You know, Gandhi talks about being the change you want to see in the world. Charles Eisenstein has something he says along the lines of, there is a better world that our hearts tell us is possible, you know? And that's like what I want to try and inspire by putting out the Sunday sermons is just more of that feeling. And let's get people really saying, you know what? I don't have any obligation to anybody else in this world, but I'm going to forego my own selfish desires in the large, and I'm going to try and work to help others. You know, I'm going to work to help build communities. I am going to work to help families, even though I'm a single taxpayer. You know, I'm going to work. And then there's the people in the third world countries too that I want to inspire and let them know that there is a purpose to all of this horrible experience we have to endure. There is a purpose to the pain and the suffering. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's, oh, for the one true God. No, it's nothing like that. This is not about one truth. This is about all of our truths. This is about reminding ourselves that we are on a spiritual mission here. And if you disagree with that idea, well, that's fine too. There's still something for you in these Sunday sermons as well, you materialists, you. It's okay. I think there's something here because this is the emotional body that we're talking about here. You know, this is something that everybody can relate to. And again, the world has some serious problems. And when do we say enough is enough? I'm going to start to do something about it. Something. I can't change the world, but I can do something. You know, that's the mood of soul that is so necessary right now in so many ways. So there's my sermon. It's the only one you're going to hear from me. As I said, today, the lecture, the sermon is from Mr. Manly P. Hall.
So in this particular instance, we have to take it for granted that there must be some way in which this life in us can tell its story. And probably the ancient mystics, the theologians of the remote past, who gave us the great religions of the world, brought from the inner life of themselves or from space itself something like the Decalogue of Moses that was given by the finger of God in the clouds of Sinai. There have been revelations by means of which the individual has been given the key to his own salvation. We find it in the Ten Commandments, we find it in the teachings of Jesus, in Buddha, Zoroaster, Hermes, Confucius, Lao Tzu, Pythagoras, all of these great people who were the real teachers of mankind, pointed out this inevitable truth that as we are able to control the false pressures of ourselves, we return again to friendship with the divine. We find our own unity with reality by consciously rising above unreality and illusion. Actually, therefore, the problem of getting at this inner core of things is probably through a meditational process. But the meditational process is not valuable unless it is supported by a definite, honorable, conscious dedication. A meditation that does not alter conduct is an illusion. The individual who loves God but does not love his fellow man is getting nowhere, regardless of all the platitudes he may think up or all the defenses he may construct for his own action. The law works in a certain way. The law says there are no enemies in my level of consciousness. Therefore, it is not tolerable in the embodied being. Everything that is part of the eternity in us is completely controlled and mathematically structured in an integrity that is incorruptible. So it is not what the law can do to please us, but what we must do in order to keep faith with the law. This is the important consideration. Actually, today, confusion and sorrows and miseries are making deep inroads into our personal attitudes. Probably for the first time in many persons' lifetime, thoughts concerning integrities are coming into focus. We are beginning to realize that something is wrong. And we are also beginning to realize that prayers without works are not going to remedy the situation. And also that all the materialistic compromises that we ever make, industrially, economically, or militarily, will never solve the problem. There can never be a war that will bring peace. There never can be a world materialistic civilization that can bring security or happiness to the people of the world. All things finally decide in shifting, or result from shifting, the level of leadership from the materialistic factors that we now more or less are slave to, and restoring our allegiance to that which is without fault or blemish, that which is the integrity of things. In other words, man must find ways of restoring the golden age of integrity in his own world. And that means that he must follow the leadership of life and not the leadership of death. He must gradually and inevitably weed out his own mistakes. Now, we might say that should be a legislation to do this, that they should pass a law and make it obligatory. Unfortunately, this type of law will not be passed because those who most need it are most afraid of it. They are not concerned with making it work. They would be very unhappy if they found that it did work. Because if selfishness can be proven to be a complete failure, we might have a better kind of world to live in. It has proved that it is a failure. But a lot of people are clinging to the hope that they are going to be exceptions to the general condition. That they can do as they please and all will be well, but other people cannot. So here we have the problem that we must shift our allegiance. Now, theology attempted to do this, but unfortunately, theology also settled back onto the level of the mind and the personal claims of people. What should have been the service of deity became a hierarchy on the theological level, which very largely developed ambitions and power complexes and mistook physical wealth for spiritual integrity. Thus, the theological system didn't work well. But it is true, finally, that this universe is a theocracy. But it is a theocracy in which the supreme power is vested not in a regent, but in the law or truth itself. There is a law that holds atoms together. There is a law that perpetuates the species. There is a law that gives us food and air. And there is a law that brings moral life into our families. These rules are the basis of human relationships. When they are obeyed, problems are solved. When they are avoided or corrupted or compromised, problems increase. So sit down sometime by yourself. When you want to do something, when you want to say something, for any act of importance that you make, and try to find out the level from which it comes. See if you can find in your own actions levels of causation that you cannot explain. This may be the very key to the whole matter. If you know where it came from, you may still be in trouble. But if you reach that point where you know something must be done, but you do not know why, but the determination to do it is the greatest and represents the highest concept of conviction of integrity that you possess, you're moving in the right direction. So it becomes very important to weed out ulterior motives which disfigure the conduct and character of the person. Well, we have in this philosophical field that concerns us, we have a whole group of beautiful teachings, wonderful ideas, wonderful and constructive notions. But interwoven among them is a very large amount of self-conceit. Instead of being just a pure faith in realities, these various faiths become competitive institutions trying to take memberships away from each other, which has nothing to do with the fact, because the only organization in which a real membership can exist is in the organization of that being which is within and behind the body. In other words, heaven is the only organization that can survive, because it is the only one which is all-inclusive, and therefore in which there can be no conflicts, no jealousies, no competitive careers. Now, as you take this into your own life, if you are concerned with trying to improve your inner life, and I think we all are, certainly we do the best we know how in most cases, but by sitting down carefully and thinking about what we do, we may be able to raise the whole platform of life one step nearer to the being in the body, something nearer to the universal will of that which is now locked within a cage of particulars. So if you say, I think I should do this, or I think I shouldn't do that, try and find out why. See what level of integrity you're working from, and see if you can find out how to remove from your daily life all or as many as you can of the factors which disfigure the relationship between the being and the body. In other words, everything which is a compromise tightens the prison which locks in the principle of life. If then we say to ourselves, I want to be a religious person, and to be a religious person, I want to have spirituality. I want to have insight, I want to have integrities, I want to have the assurance that I'm on my way to cosmic consciousness or something like it. So we then say to ourselves, why do I want this? Why do I want to know more than I know now? And when you start digging into yourself to find the answer to that question, you may find some other curious circumstances. We may find that under this search for truth, the real fact is ambition. We want to be greater than somebody else. We want to be wiser than somebody else. We want to have influence over other people. We want to gradually expand our knowledge and understanding in the sense that we are going to become members of the higher board of directors and are going to contribute to telling everything else what to do. This type of attitude is there. We see it frequently. We find that the individuals trying to grow puts a barrier in the path of his own growth. He puts the barrier of why he wants to grow. He wants to outdistance something, or he wants to avoid something. I know a number of people who have turned to religion, for example, because they were lonely. Well, something can be said. Maybe it was moved them in that direction. But the life they are seeking, the light they are seeking, is something much higher than the fact that they are isolated or semi-isolated in this world. Everything must move to the fulfillment of that which is the infinite reality. And this infinite reality has no pets, it has no favorites, it has no intention of picking out an ordinary mortal and deifying them for some reason. Everything depends on the motives. If, however, you can go inside of yourself and you can say to yourself honestly and without restriction and without reservation, I want to know more only for one reason, that I can serve others, that I can be more useful. Now then, the moment this comes up, however, the secondary egotism steps in, if you're not very careful. Because the process of serving others becomes a form of the fulfillment of an impulse to leadership, which can also get into trouble. We have to try to understand in ourselves why we want to be good. Is it to be comfortable? Is it to be forceful? Is it to improve our material circumstances alone? Or is it because we sincerely want to give full expression to something higher than we've ever known before? If the motives are right, and if our dedication is correct, among the byproducts of it will be many of the things that we think we need. We will find that happiness is a byproduct. You cannot make yourself happy. Happiness is the result of so living that the inner life is at peace. This, consequently, is a byproduct, but it has to be earned. The Arabian Nights entertainment has the line in it, "Happiness must be earned." And this is very, very true. And to earn it, we must deserve it. And to deserve it, we must have kept the rules by means of which the integrities of life are protected. Otherwise, we cannot be happy. So it comes to many different attitudes. But we have to also then take a careful look at the other side of the coin. A great many people, feeling that it's necessary to grow in some way, decide that the best way to grow is to get away from humanity, to get off by themselves into some community and live uncontaminated existences. This is another obvious failure. There is nothing to be gained by the individual seeking for peace in order to gain his own comfort and liberation. There can be no real peace without solution. The avoider cannot achieve either. It is only the person who works with the problems, stays out there and fights with it, who can bring about within his own nature a strength great enough to be of useful value to the divine plan of things. We cannot run away from unfinished business and consider that a solution. We cannot believe that virtue is to be attained by hiding oneself from vice. It is not that way at all. Virtue is a consciousness which transcends vice, corrects it, and goes on. Anything that is an evasion or an avoidance means that we are closing a channel by which the life in us is supposed to function. Therefore, a full life means that we grow from mistakes, but we benefit from them. Most people lose almost all the value of a mistake because their first thought is to blame somebody else for it. The individual who makes a bad decision considers that he's been over-influenced. Only reason why a person is over-influenced really is because they haven't got the inner life light to influence themselves correctly. So that there is no gain if we transfer the guilt for our misfortunes to society or to other persons or to situations that arise in our environment. The individual must accept full responsibility. The moment he can evade himself out of a problem, its value as a spiritual experience is lost. And we nearly always do it. I think it's one of the most common problems in the world. One, of course, of the reasons for it is that we may accept a level of advice which is inadequate. If we follow persons who do not know, then we are in trouble. And if we try to find answers to our own shortcomings from sources which are inadequate and are not intelligently dominated, we can't get very far. Now, one of the things I think we also have to realize is that a useless life is a waste of divine energy. A useless life is like turning all the lights in the house on and then going away and leaving them on. A useless life is energy expended for no reason. A useless life is waste. And it's often involved in extravagance because the useless individual tries to buy usefulness, tries to find some kind of false entertainment or false pleasures, which are usually expensive. Therefore, it is very, very important for the individual to maintain a proper usefulness with life. Every day should be loaded with lessons of some kind. The individual should be better at the end of every day. He should be a little nearer to obeying the law, because all the experiences of his outside living reveal laws every time he turns around. He is constantly in the midst of a network of realities which he rejects or ignores or tries to misinterpret. So the individual who has this energy within him is not doing it well if he wastes it. And wastes it means to do things that are not useful, not helpful, not purposeful, and not in harmony with truth. Uselessness is to fill empty time to try to be as comfortable as possible till death comes. It is just sitting around doing foolish things and assuming that this is living. As long as a person has the breath of life in themselves, they can labor and learn. They can do something that is significant to the unfoldment of their own inner lives. To waste time is, in a sense, a sin against God, because time is a period set aside for use. And when we waste it, we waste the life power that should have motivated it. And when we use the spiritual energies of life for some trite and useless activity, we are simply failing in the large emergencies of things. So with the Greeks and the Oriental people also, there comes this problem of trying to get into the inside of our own questions and our own problems. Pythagoras advocated a discipline of retrospection for this purpose. He taught that his disciples and everyone who believed in truth should at the end of every day make a very careful analysis of that day and its happenings, usually in reverse order, so that in the problem of meditating or of working with this retrospective exercise, the individual begins with the effect in that day and goes back to the cause. Instead of seeing the causes produce their effects, he sees effects and then that way becomes gradually aware of causes. This is the more important way, according to the Greek consciousness, because it's the effect that we face every day, and it is the cause of the effect that we ignore. So in retrospective exercise, the person takes a good long look at himself. He realizes that he is the pen in the hand of a ready writer. He realizes that he has resources which are intended to perfect him and fulfill him so that he can go on into higher orders of evolutionary existence. That he therefore should study, meditate upon his own conduct. If he finds that he has made a mistake that is correctable, he should correct it. Sometimes a mistake can be corrected if you find it out within a few hours. If you wait for 20 years, it very often cannot be corrected. So you start in and you say, well, I was annoyed. I got angry. I said something very unkind to my child this afternoon. Why? Because I was annoyed. Why was I annoyed? Because, well, someone bothered me when I didn't want to be bothered. And so you trace on back until you find out the cause of the annoyance. You look yourself straight in the face and say, hey, that was pretty foolish. You finally discover that your daily life is a mass of unrelated incidents that are comparatively meaningless. and by the time night comes, you're worn out with your own mistakes. This isn't necessary. It is perfectly possible for the individual, by carefully watching a day's activity, to find out what he neglected, what he did that was wrong, what he spent that he shouldn't have spent, the kind words he should have spoken but didn't, unkind words that he should not have spoken but did. All these things in a nice, quiet retrospection over a period of 20 or 30 minutes at the end of a day will help the individual to find out how he really lived. And the interesting point about that is this process of retrospection, what is behind it? What would make us do this? Why would we want to know something more about ourselves? Why should we want to correct some mistake? The answer gradually becomes apparent as we do the retrospection. Namely, that wherever we did that which was not right, the consequences were bad. Whatever we misrepresented hurt us. Whatever we neglected left us less reliant. We became less and less thoughtful because we made no effort to determine the consequences of our own conduct. All of this gradually releases into us a realization of something, namely that there is nothing in this world that we can think, feel, or do that does not have consequences. And these consequences are part of the law, and they relate to the being in the body. It is not the mind that punishes us. It is life that punishes us. It is not the emotion that destroys us because we have misused it. It is because the energy in the emotion was ruled by universal law and we broke the rule. Behind everything is an eternal flow of quiet, smooth life. And wherever it becomes choppy, it's because of something we do. Now, we may say that we like that kind of variety. We'd rather make a few mistakes because it's interesting. But unfortunately, these interesting mistakes gradually undermine character. We cannot tolerate them. But the answer, of course, is to find something that is more interesting, something that is more happy than the mistakes that we have been depending upon for variety. It is not necessary for the individual to become angry simply because he possesses the potential of anger. It is perfectly possible to use this energy better. And fate and fortune, and to that matter, compensation, punishment, all are related to the use and abuse of the divine energy upon which all things depend. The moment we abuse life, life becomes unhappy. It becomes unpleasant. Not because life itself is pointing a finger at us, not because some evil spirit is causing us troubles, but because inherent in life is a power. And this power, if frustrated or misused or abused, will turn upon us. And will gradually continue to turn upon us until at last we are forced into line with the integrities. One way, of course, to help to get the thing into a little better condition is to make sure that every day of our living, as far as possible, is in itself an interesting experience. We should have interests. We should have things to think about which keep our minds from negative attitudes. We should have a busy mental and emotional life that is constructive, that is doing things to add to our value as human beings. Art, music, all of these kinds of arts help to ennoble emotions and help to take us away from allowing emotions to simply stew inside of ourselves until they break out as a temper fit. All of the creative things of life are available to us because law is not only a preserver of all things, but it is the creator of all things. The universal law is creative. It is eternal in its unfoldment. And it is constantly so structured that it will reveal more and more of itself to those who make proper use of its resources. So it's a very good idea for the individual to be economical about things. we can't help but feel that there's a great deal of wastefulness in modern living. Most of the things that we do for pleasure cannot be justified. They mean absolutely nothing. They add to nothing. Many of them are very expensive, and then when they're all through, there's not much left but a headache. So therefore, one of the important things and that will help us to live properly is to control and direct activities. We can do things for less money, probably, that are far more interesting than many of the so-called pleasures which we now indulge, often excessively. Everything that works together for life and for value gradually builds up a tremendous sense of worthwhileness, a sense of doing something that is of significance to other people and of value to ourselves. So the retrospective exercise is a very good exercise for those who want to get into a little closer relationship with themselves. On the other hand, also, you have a form of concentrative exercise that Pythagoras also advocated. He and his disciples went out at dawn and offered the day to the life which had created it. They planned the day with not a heavy burden of responsibilities, but with a sense of significance. They took into account all the things that we have to do with the day, and that we don't have all this time to do anything we want to. But one of the things that we must try to preserve is enough energy and time to make some useful contribution every day to something, to some value within ourselves. Perhaps we can make this contribution in the job itself where we work. Just a little more sincerity in the work, just a little more willingness and desire to earn the paycheck, just to be a little bit more careful and cautious and economical in the various functions of our daily life. A little more thoughtful of family, a little more thoughtful of all the problems that come along. By planning the day in advance and planning it before occasions demand, and then staying with the plan and standing firm against occasions that disqualify it, gradually we gain control over what we're going to do next, rather than trying to figure out how to get over what we've already done. So little by little, we gain a homogeneity, an integrity, a consistency, and a onefulness, a purposed life. Now, absolutely no one can be really happy who is bored. And nearly everyone is bored who isn't doing something useful. Boredom is nearly always associated with excess and corruptions of one kind or another. We try to do something to forget the fact that we're not doing anything. So in these things, you start looking inside yourself, and you try to measure out and say, I have an allotment. I have so much energy every day. I pay for this energy by the fact that I use it, and as I use it, I live in a limited amount of time. Therefore, I can only use this particular form of energy in this particular way while I am embodied in this world. Therefore, I want to make the most of this energy. I want it to help to build a better world. I want to find the pleasure in myself that comes from being useful rather than ornamental. I want to do things that make meaning. And also, I do not want to support extravagance. I do not want to dissipate or do these things which have no value to the life within us. Perhaps one of the simplest ways the old Christian mystic always used the symbol of Christ knocking at the door. This universal power in us, we can term the only begotten of the Father. It is the life itself. And it has a force that is forever knocking at our door. It is knocking through the medium of the heart and through the love and thoughtfulness and wisdom that comes from dedication to principles. And every day we live, this divine power is seeking to come through us. It wants to express itself in the creature which it has fashioned, for man is the noblest and most completely integrated form of life that we know. Man has the greatest potential. He has the greatest power to be, to do, to use the divine energies. He can actually help to restore the world which his ancestors destroyed. He can bring about now the conditions which will advance the destiny of descendants and help to leave a better world behind him. But between him and this achievement is always the arrogance, the ambition, and the self-centeredness, the selfishness that comes from his desperate effort to become important in the material world. We should have learned before this that it doesn't make any difference whether you're the most humble person in all the world or whether you are one of the world's great dictators, you're going to go to sleep in the same earth. Therefore, this idea of trying to own the world is a fallacy, for no one can own more than the amount it takes for his own body. And the rest is ambition, arrogance, and superstition. So we try to do something as we go along to release and venerate this life in ourselves. We want to think of our bodies as temples, as sanctuaries of a divine power. Whether we're rich or poor, whether the humblest of all native, primitive people, or the most highly evolved that we can imagine, we are all living houses of worship for the life that is within us. And in this life, in this temple, is the heart, which is the high altar. And here it is that the divine spirit abides with us. Our body is a living house of a living God. It is a place of worship. It is a place to dedicate to life. And each one, in the course of time, through the maturing of his own inner life, becomes an apostle of the life in the heart. He receives ordination, and every human being is potentially a minister of the Lord, a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek, Prince of Salem. Every part of us is finally going to become a servant dedicated to the eternal in ourselves. Until this happens, problems will not end. Until this happens, the values of our lives will be uncertain. But it is very important to begin to think about it and try little by little to live according to this eternal power rather than to live according to the temporal attitudes and opinions of our own natures. It is very, very valuable to even make a little start and say to ourselves, today I will not waste that time again. Today I will not become an alcoholic. Today I will not increase my miseries and sufferings through perversities of mind, emotion, or body. I will not worry over that which cannot be changed. I will endure with patience that which is necessary. And I will find in the end that by accepting these problems rather than fighting them, I come through the end of the day with much more energy that can be devoted to better things. After all, this is really, in a sense, the mystery of the Eucharist. This is the mystery of the Last Supper. For this divine energy feeds us all. It is the source of every moment of our existence. It is not only the energy in ourselves that feeds us. We are also fed by the energy in other things that sacrifice themselves for our good. The energy in the wheat, in the flour, in all the different fruits and vegetables. The energies in all things become part of a power to restore our own material existence. And this vitality that we talk about with vitamins and all that, this is simply the same divine energy on a lower level of function. That part of energy which is completely related to body is understood in the form of nutrition. It prevents us from losing our lives for lack of food. And the alchemy of digestion and transformation within ourselves is nature's supreme mystery as far as physical matters are concerned. And therefore we have a kind of Eucharist here. One energy feeding all things. One life living in all things. And one life dedicating all these other lives, like the disciples at the Eucharist, to go forth and spread the gospel. To go and heal the sick. And comfort the sorrowful, and all these different things, and raise the dead. And in raising the dead, raise the individual who is completely locked in his materialism, for though he may be walking around, he is still dead. He is dead until life lifts him up into purpose. Until he has a purpose, he is not alive. And that one purpose must never be self-interest. Because that makes him more and more a kind of antichrist. It makes him more and more away from the great flow of life. We are all living by the shores of the river of life, and we are all dependent upon it. And the answer to it is that this river of life is our God. It is the spirit of all things in the innermost and the furthermost. It is the spirit in the tiniest mote floating in the sunbeam. It is the spirit in the vast galaxy which exists in space. All these things are moved by one energy, one life. And all these things survive because they obey the laws of that energy. And man, as Aquinas has pointed out, having a certain limited ability to function according to his own mind, determinism, he is capable of the mistaken decision. Because he has the right to choose, he may choose that which is best or that which is not best. But by the choice, he is disciplined. The reason man must make a choice himself is because he is not a creature that is a slave to anything. His final enlightenment comes through self-determination. By choosing that which is right, he becomes right. And by becoming right, he uses the energies of space to preserve that which is right for himself and others. Now we are in the shadow of very heavy times at this moment, and they're very discouraging to many people. But we have to realize that this great life, which is moving through everything, has its own rules and can never fail. Ultimately, this life will bring all things home to itself again. It will prove out over infinities of time that the lessons that are necessary must be accepted. But by accepting the lessons, either by choice or necessity, we are growing toward that which is our own inevitable destiny. The destiny to fulfill the divine plan. The destiny to realize that we too are divine beings capable of determining right and wrong. Capable of living according to law or according to the bodily pressures of environment. We can win the fight, but we can win a little every day. And every day when we make the smallest victory, there will be a little more of happiness and a little less of pain. Every day, one step forward, even a small decision, will strengthen us for another one tomorrow. And gradually, these right decisions will bring us enlightenment and companionship in the spiritual adventure of existence. These are the things that are important, and we hope that everyone will give a little special thought to them in his own way. Well, I guess that's all we can do right now, but I've got a couple of announcements to make that I think are important. This afternoon, we are having a memorial service at 1 o'clock.
All right, and that was Manly P. Hall. The talk entitled Learning to Know the Dweller in the Flesh, most of Side A and all of Side B. If you like what you heard, you can find many, 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 many hours of Manly Hall lectures online in torrent files. Search for Manly P. Hall Complete Lectures, and then there's another one, Manly P. Hall Lectures Part 2. Apparently there was much missed in the first complete series, but this talk, Learning to Know the Dweller in the Flesh, came from the Part 2 lecture torrent of Manly P. Hall. I don't remember which folder offhand you can find it in, but I'll let you do the homework. As they say, don't give the audience everything. I hope you enjoyed it, and I imagine if you're listening still that you did like this talk. Recently, like I said, I've been listening to a lot of from this guy, and I'm going to play just a couple more on the Sunday sermons. But the effect he's had on myself and some of the other people I've turned him on to recently has been a very positive one. And even if you don't agree with some of his, you know, ideas of spiritual realities and whatnot, or if you don't even understand some of what he talks about, there is so much that I think he presents in each talk that is of practical nature and just is very understandable, very common, you know, almost archetypal in a way. And so I also know the effect he can have on people is that he presents so much information. His lectures are so dense, it seems, that, you know, you could really go back and listen to him a few times. And I definitely encourage you to do that. But, you know, there's a lot of ideas that you can miss on the first go-through. But if there's anything that I personally would really enjoy to have you all walk away with after listening to this podcast, the one thing I would love for you to take away is this notion of the Pythagorean retrospection. I've heard of this technique in much more simple ways in different contexts, some occult techniques for developing memory and things like that. This idea of looking back on your day, you know, but Manly Hall really fleshed out what I perceive to be a very powerful method for self-development, and something so simple as well. And I think those are the things really we're looking for here on the Next Step podcast. It's stuff that you don't necessarily need much money to do. It's something that is a human ability that, you know, you just can be done in poor conditions and wealthy as well. So if anything I can add to the end of this wonderful talk, it would just be to give it a try yourself, a little bit of Pythagorean retrospection. And yeah, I guess that's all for me. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday or whatever day it happens to be while you're listening to this, when you're listening to this. And be most excellent to each other. All right. Take it easy. Jarrett Sanchez signing off. We'll catch you next week for next week's Sunday sermon. Goodbye.